Okay, this hour, Lyle Blackburn is with us, frequent contributor and cryptozoology advisor to the Rue Morgue magazine. Lyle's Monstro Bizarro blog is featured on the Rue's website, and his Monstro Bizarro Presents news column appears monthly in the print magazine. He has also contributed to websites such as Lauren Coleman's Crypto Mundo website and has been a featured speaker at conferences and horror conventions around the country. Lyle, how are you? Good to have you with us.
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
That clip of Boggy Creek is kind of scary, that sound. What do you think this thing is?
Well, you know, it's got to be related to the Sasquatch. You know, it's kind of Arkansas's interpretation of that.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, it's said to be a little more hairy, a little more lean and mean and dangerous. But, you know, I think it's definitely related to you know, to the Bigfoot species.
When it came out back in the 70s, what kind of influence did it have on people? Did it scare them? Did it turn folks into researchers? What did it do?
Well, it was definitely, the movie was kind of a huge hit. You know, it on the drive-in circuit, you know, it brought in $25 million. So it was scary, you know, it had a G rating. So it was kind of a phenomenon. And, you know, it scared people, and as well, people who were interested in the Bigfoot phenomenon. You know, it came out about 5 years after the Patterson film. And in those days, you know, you didn't have a lot of visuals. So things like this really had an impact on people who were interested in cryptozoology or, you know, monsters. And so, you know, a lot of the major figures in cryptozoology today, Lauren Coleman and guys like that, cite the movie as a huge influence on them when they were younger.
It was. I mean, it just, it had it all. It had the scariness about it, but it also had some science tossed in, too.
Right. Yeah, and I think it worked on many levels, you know, for that reason, because it was a good movie, because, you know, it was scary, and it drew in the crowds. But, you know, it was based on a so-called true story, so that brought in the people, you know, to do the research and kind of triggered people to look into it further, you know.
And tell me about some of the sightings that occurred in the 70s in that region.
You know, in the 70s, that's kind of what kicked off the media age, is what I call it. And these were covered in the Texarkana Gazette and a lot of the local newspapers down in Arkansas. The first sighting occurred in May of 1971, and that's kind of the starting point of that. It was a family was supposedly attacked after a series of occurrences around their house. They took some shots at it, and basically a guy ended up in the Texarkana hospital treated for shock and injuries. And when that guy was in the hospital down there, you know, the doctor called one of the news reporters and said, "Hey, man, you know, I've got a guy down here who said he was attacked by a big hairy monster." And so the next day, the news guys went out and, you know, investigated and interviewed the people. And that made it in the paper. And it just literally read, "Falk family terrorized by hairy monster." And, of course, that just really drew the attention to the area, you know. And then from there, several people saw it run across the highway, and there was more and more sightings. There was literally, you know, 50 within a year there in 1971.
You think they were looking at one creature, Lyle, or many?
Well, I mean, logic tells you that you know, if it's a real animal, there's got to be more than one.
Right.
It's hard to say that. If they were seeing the same one, the descriptions did range from, you know, most of them seemed to describe one general build of an adult creature, but they did have some sightings of some smaller ones. So it seemed to indicate that there could have been juveniles present, you know.
What got you to write about the Beast of Boggy Creek?
Well, you know, I'd always been interested in these subjects, and I was able to see the movie when I was young at the drive-in. And, you know, at the time when I was young, my dad, he's an avid hunter, so he had taken me hunting ever since I could basically walk, you know. We had visited a lot of small towns and camped and hunted in the Texas and Arkansas area. And I grew up in Fort Worth, which is about 3 hours from Falk. So when I saw the movie, not only was it a cool, scary movie from what I can remember as a kid, but it made me realize that, wow, you know, Bigfoot may not just exist, you know, somewhere in the far off Pacific Northwest. There might be a creature like that down here close to me. So it really took a hold of me. And then as I started doing some writing with cryptozoology later, I thought, man, I want to really look back at the movie. And, you know, the tagline for the movie was a true story. So I really wanted to look into it and see, you know, what was true about this and what was fictionalized. And that's what led me to write the book.
And in your opinion, Lyle, where is the truth start and where does it end?
Well, that's the thing. I thought I would, you know, find that, you know, there was a couple of sightings and everything else was dramatized for the movie. But I found that it's the opposite, that most of the sightings in the movie and what people see, of course, they were, you know, embellished, but they were all based upon real sightings that people had reported to the newspapers or to other people. And so I found that even though it's a movie, it's definitely based on some fact, and that people really did believe they were seeing this creature down there.
And I think, like you do, that it was probably a Sasquatch type creature that they've been seeing, as opposed to Mothman, for example.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I didn't encounter any, you know, fantastical descriptions of it having wings or other, giant glowing eyes or anything like that. They were pretty consistent with the descriptions, and, you know, they ran the gamut of your basic Bigfoot descriptions, although usually it would range up to 7 feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of descriptions of being 8 feet or anything like that. And, it kind of had a relation to maybe the skunk ape type creatures, because a lot of people would describe it as having a really foul odor. So I kind of look at it as possibly something across between a skunk ape and a Pacific Northwest Bigfoot.
Tell me a little bit about the witnesses that you detail in your work. I mean, there was one case where they were seen by 5 people. That's got to be a pretty good case.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there were some amazing sightings. I mean, a lot of people kind of believe that, all this took place in the 70s and there hadn't been any sightings. But I found that sightings have continued on. And in the particular case you're talking about, there was actually 2 sightings in 1991 in which 5 or more people saw it at once. In this one case, there was a carload of 5 guys driving kind of late at night on this county road near a bayou, and a trucker was coming the other direction. And in the headlights from both cars, they could see what they described as a tall, hairy, bulky animal walk on 2 legs from out of a field, walk across the road, and then disappear into the darkness. So both the vehicles stop. The 5 guys get out, and they lived in the area, and so they pretty much knew the story, and they're thinking, man, we just saw the foul monster, you know. And the trucker gets out, and he's like, what was that? And they say, well, have you ever heard of the legend of Boggy Creek? He's like, no. So he had never even heard of it. So that was just a really amazing sighting. I interviewed 2 of the guys out of this.
And they seemed like they were telling the truth.
I mean, they definitely seemed on the level. They were willing to talk about it. And, from all accounts I could gather, they saw what they said they saw.
Well, you see, these are what I find to be so fascinating about these cases, Lyle, because nobody that reports these is out for any financial gain or anything like that.
Oh, definitely. And I think especially in a case like this, this is the first time that sighting's been reported. So it's not like they ran to the paper or the TV station. You know, I had to really dig to find these folks and to get them to tell me the story. So they definitely, you know, were not in it for fame and fortune.
Are we still getting sightings in this town?
Yeah, definitely. I was just, of course, once my book came out, I was still getting them. I mean, I just investigated a sighting that happened last fall up there in which a girl saw it run across the road. So, you know, my book has sightings all the way up till 2011. So, yeah, it seems to be continuing.
Tell me a little bit about this large skeleton that was discovered, Lyle, out there in 91.
Well, that's another kind of aspect to the Fountain Monster story. I've seen over the years, people, there seems to be a lot of confusion. I've seen a lot of posts on the Bigfoot forums and places like that. But basically, there was a large skeleton found in the woods near Jefferson, Texas, which is not very far from Falk, Arkansas, just across the border there. And that was taken up there by a gentleman named Smokey Crabtree, who was in the legend Boggy Creek. And they found it and got it into his hands. And, you know, over the years, there's been various theories about what that thing is. I actually had the chance to see it, and it is a crazy-looking thing. It's still... it has no skin. It's got tendons and other parts still on the skeleton, but it's definitely of a huge animal. So that was one of the things in my book I really wanted to research and to interview all the law officials and everybody that had been involved in that and try to settle the case as to what that is.
Does it look like it could be the skeleton of a Bigfoot?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when I first saw it, my jaw dropped. I mean, I didn't know what I was looking at. I mean, you can tell it's not a, you know, it's not a horse. It's not a, you know, it's just a huge skeleton.
Does it look human, like a big human?
Well, human-like. Unfortunately, there's no head.
That's what you needed.
You know, that would definitely be a smoking gun as to what it is. But, and so hence the conjecture on what it was, but it definitely strikes you as a big animal.
Does it look like it would walk upright?
Well, its shoulders are narrow, so that it tends to stray away from a bipedal animal. But
okay, I see what you mean.
You know, but I do
like a bear,
something, you know. I finally sorted out, you know, let the readers figure it out, but there's a really intriguing story behind the whole thing, which I go through in one of the chapters of my book.
What do you think this creature is, Lyle?
The Falk Monster itself?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just kind of start, you know, growing up as a hunter, you know, I tend to see animals as animals. So I tend to think that it's, some kind of, you know, reclusive wood ape, so to speak, that has somehow managed to avoid capture.
Capture, sure.
There's so much forestry and bottomlands up there in this area where Falk is. And Falk is close to Texarkana, which is pretty much at the corner of the states of Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas. So right there where Falk is, a lot of forest lands converge. There's like 65 million acres back in there, forestry. And, you know, it's possible that a creature could remain hidden in there.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's no doubt that it's just strange that, you know, it's not really been found. Doesn't seem to be particularly violent, and it does seem to have some intelligence to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would think. I mean, you have to give them that, because for something to remain elusive this long, they've got to have, you know, some smarts to them to avoid humans. And, you know, there's a lot of theories that when the rainfall is heavy, that's kind of what draws them out of the bottoms. I tried to correlate some of that, you know, as best I could to find patterns. So, you know, it seems like that the only times they're coming closer to the town or closer to people, and when I say town, Falk is a little bitty place. I mean, there's not a lot of people.
Right.
You know, and so, but on those times, you know, perhaps the rain has forced them out, so I don't think it's a voluntary thing. The movie kind of portrays it that it's, you know, looking to be angry and, you know, stroll around and be curious in the town, but I think it's very reclusive. You know?
What's the terrain of the town look like, Lyle?
Well, back in the 70s, when the, you know, the hype started, the town has had a population of 500 people. It's only 800 now. So it remains as a very, very small town. There's probably, you know, 1,500 people living in the general area. And a little bit southwest of Falk, there's a community called Jonesville. And back in the 60s and even back to the 40s, there was a lot of sightings down there that weren't ever reported. Those never made it to the newspapers. And so when you start getting down into Jonesville, where all these other sites are, people are very spread out. It's very rural, very, you know, they only paved the roads down there, I think, in like the 90s. So, you know, these are very backwoods area. And, you know, if you go further southwest and south from Jonesville, you basically get out into the Mercer Bayou and the Sulphur River bottoms. So beyond that, there is just a lot of uninhabitable areas.
So a creature could hide there for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of makes sense with the location of where all this occurred, and given the proximity to these to the Sulphur River Wildlife Management Area and all that, it kind of makes sense.
Do people speculate, Lyle, that it's more animal than a human?
A lot of people kind of described it as kind of a hairy human, you know, and then some people would describe it as ape-like. So there's kind of been both, but I tend to see most descriptions in the realms of it being some sort of an ape-like creature.
Your book, is it still available, Beast of Boggy Creek?
Yes, yeah, it was just released in March, so...
It better be still available.
Yeah, yeah. It's all over, man.
Well, that's good for you. Good for you. Any plans for more?
Yeah. I've started work on a new book here, so I'm hoping to get that going pretty soon.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Beast of Boggy Creek when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'll also tell you what's in store on our next program. Also, special note, don't forget, Linda Moulton Howe will be our special guest on Thursday. She went out and investigated a number of different stories. And as far as me, travel schedule on Saturday. So go up to my calendar section and track me down and come on by if you're in the greater Los Angeles area. Up next, your phone calls, more with Lyle Blackbird as we talk about the Beast of Boggy Creek right here on Coast to Coast AM. His website is monstrobizarro.com. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about how we can restore your dreams for prosperity. And then later on in the show, we'll be talking about secret societies and the Illuminati. When we come back in a moment, more about the Beast of Boggy Creek on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Lyle Blackburn. We'll take your calls. Lyle, how would you rank the legend of Boggy Creek in that creature with other Bigfoot cases we hear so much about?
Well, I mean, personally, since I've done so much research into it, I rank it pretty high as being credible and very possible. I've interviewed a lot of people in the Texas area and there's some really amazing sightings, but for me, I've got to put that pretty high on the scale of possibilities.
When the movie came out back in the 70s, and it was a low-budget film, but it went on to make $20, $25 million, how did they accomplish that?
Well, it was kind of like the modern-day version of movies like Paranormal Activity or The Blair Witch Project, which basically it was kind of unexpected. When Charles Pierce started seeing the reports in the Texarkana Gazette newspaper of a creature attacking people down in Falk, you know, he had been looking for a subject for a movie. He thought, wow, you know, that's perfect. He lived in Texarkana. It's just about 15 minutes down the road. So he just basically got a businessman to loan him a little money, and he took a camera down there and just started interviewing people. And, you know, he started out kind of wanting to make a documentary, but ended up, you know, the footage was pretty good, so he brought in a script writer, and he just sort of developed it as he went, just literally what I, no pun intended, guerrilla filmmaking. I mean, just like you would shoot,
that's
you
right.
know, buying a camera today and shooting a horror film in your backyard, and that's kind of what he did, and just his sheer tenacity of getting the movie made, making it well and suspenseful, and then he literally took it, had a print made, and started showing it in a little theater in Texarkana himself because he couldn't get any Hollywood backing.
No distribution, huh?
No, and I mean, from the get-go, he had lines around the block of people coming in there, and of course, once people started seeing it, was scaring them. Everybody's having a good time, word of mouth. He got a B-roll, like a bad roll of it, started showing that in Shreveport, and it was huge. So, of course, now here comes Hollywood, you know, hey, we want to get in on this. And he was a good businessman, and he made sure it went to a good distributor, and that got it into the drive-in circuit, and it just went huge. It was really amazing, an accomplishment. You
know? Did he do anything after that?
Yeah, Charles Pierce has done many films. The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which was about the 1940s case of the Phantom Killer in Texarkana, that was a good film. He did a horror film called The Evictors. He's done movies with Lee Majors and a lot of major actors. He never had a huge budget, but his movies are really pretty good and, in my opinion, highly underrated.
Okay, let's go to the calls. Let's go to JD in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hi, JD.
Hey, I'm full-blooded Native American. Around here, we're still called Indians. In Oklahoma, there is a boggy creek down by Atoka, and there's a 5 civilized tribes: Creek, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Cherokee, and there's one that's case on mine. The 5 civilized tribes. And Choctaw Country is down around the Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas border. And I have a lot of Choctaw friends who say they've seen things and their parents have seen things, their grandparents have seen things, and they've all just went with it like it was part of, you know, I don't want to say part of growing up, but they're like, hey, you know, I've seen it. We don't bother them. It doesn't bother us. We live together and amongst each other. And I'm Creek, and the Creek word for monster is honka. And we'd always, you know, tell the kids, oh, you know, I was always told, don't look out the window at night because there might be a honka looking back at you. And at night, growing up as a kid, I never looked out the window at night because I was always scared something might be looking back at me. And my grandpa told me, he goes, yeah, we were kids. Me and my cousin down the river fishing, and we saw some honkas. And I'm like, honkas? He goes, yeah, Bigfoot. He goes, we saw two of them, and we left our fish there, and we took off running as fast as we could. And my grandpa was born and died within 2 miles in the same area. He grew up in the area till this day, still has no running water, wow. No phone lines. When we buried him out there, there's no cell phone signal. So it is way out in the sticks.
And, J.D., you're convinced the creature's out there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've heard so many things. There's some things that they've always told us don't play outside after dark because, you know, you might get hit with something and you're wondering, you know, is somebody throwing something at us? And they're like, yeah, there's honkas out there throwing rocks at you because they may try to kidnap you or they just may try to knock you out just to show that, you know, you're in our area, you're in our territory.
I've investigated, and I know a lot of friends that have investigated sightings in Oklahoma, and, man, there's some really credible sightings up there for sure.
What portions of the country, Lyle, seem to get the most sightings of these creatures? Is it the Northwest?
Yeah, I think the Pacific Northwest would definitely have the most sightings still. But, you know, as information has gotten out there, you realize that there's been sightings in most of the contiguous states and in Alaska and you know, there's an increasing number everywhere else, but But I think the majority concentration is still in the Pacific Northwest.
When the legend of Boggy Creek came out, did the mainstream media jump on board?
Well, when the incidents were being reported in the Texarkana Gazette, it was picked up by the Associated Press. So the newspapers were carrying the stories of the Falk Monster, much further away from the regional papers. And then when the movie came out, a lot of people would pick up the story that way. They would kind of say, oh, you know, I'm writing about the movie, and then they'd include the information about the actual creature. So that got a widespread attention in the media. So I don't know if they jumped on it, but they definitely covered it quite a bit, you know.
Keith is driving in Texas and now on Coast to Coast, first-time caller. Hi, Keith.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How are you, George?
Good, thank you.
I was living in northeast Texas area around Mount Pleasant, Pittsburgh, when the skeleton showed up. And I can tell you what the newspapers reported it as being. It was reported as being a tiger skeleton.
Tiger?
A tiger.
Huh.
All stretched out, it would look like something that would walk on 2 feet, but your guest said, it was no head, no skull, but it was, if you think about a tiger being stretched out with its, you know, with his foot looking like an ankle, it would be quite tall.
Did you ever hear that, Lyle?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the high-ranking theories here. So, yeah, and I spoke to the retired sheriff at the time who was, you know, verified some of those news stories. So, of course, I kind of cover the whole details in the book. But yeah, the tiger skeleton was one of the theories.
I remember the cover of the movie shows this creature, like, coming out of the water or something, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know what's interesting about that, the cover, which was the movie poster for the original The Legend of
Right.
Boggy Creek, was painted by a gentleman named Ralph McQuarrie, and that was his first movie poster. Charles Pierce found him and gave him the opportunity. Well, McQuarrie went on to design and create all the famous Star Wars characters for George Lucas. So I found it kind of, coincidental or ironic that the Wookiee or Chewbacca was in Star Wars, and McQuarrie had painted that Falk Monster, which is a similar Bigfoot-type creature, on the famous poster.
Let's go to Modesto, California, west of the Rockies. Jimmy, go ahead. Hi.
Hey, George. How you doing, bud?
Good, Jimmy.
Lyle, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Hey, listen, man, I was in the military with a guy from Searcy, Arkansas, and me being out here in California, we used to swap stories about Bigfoot, and he called it the booger from Booger Creek. And we used to swap stories all the time, and that was in the early 70s. So that, whatever that is, that's been around for a while.
Sure has.
Oh, definitely. You know? Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of different names, you know, depending on what where the area is you're referring it, you know, like you said, the booger, there's the caddo critter, you know, the Falk Monster, there's a lot of those, you know.
And people, though, are still reporting in that region, Lyle, that they're seeing this?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's still a...
Same description?
Yeah, same description. And like I said, I mean, you know, there's a lot of good sightings in back in the day, but some of the more recent sightings to me seem to be even more credible, and you know, I was of course able to interview more witnesses in the modern times because a lot of the older folks are deceased, you know, so I had to get, you know, secondhand stories sometimes on the research. But for some of the newer sightings, I could interview the people themselves, and so of course that made it a stronger case if I thought that they were credible, you know.
Does it seem to be nocturnal?
Yeah, most of the sightings are at night, you know, and which is odd because
I think it would sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. Apes wouldn't typically be nocturnal, but most of the Bigfoot sightings, tend to show that the creature's nocturnal. Maybe it's, maybe that's another reason it's hard to find. You know, it's smart enough to sleep during the daylight hours. I don't know.
Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Glenn, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Glenn.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Good.
Listen, Law, what I wanted to find out, I had a friend that lived in Broken Bow, Oklahoma, right there by the Texas border. Was there a lot of sightings in that area in the earlier times, or is there still sightings now that are you aware of?
In Broken Bow, Oklahoma?
Yes.
Yeah, just north of there, there is some extremely credible sightings that I'm aware of, and those are very recent. I'm not sure how far the history of sightings goes back in that area. I'm aware of some, at least for the last decade, but I'm definitely in the know about some good sightings. So that area, you know, and contrary to people's belief, people picture Texas and Oklahoma as sort of barren wastelands, and but there's a lot of forested regions, and up along those creeks, this is where the sightings usually are, and up in that Broken Bow area, north of that is the Ouachita Mountains, which sort of spills over into Arkansas, and that's just a hugely forested area out in the middle of nowhere.
How far back do the Boggy Creek stories go?
The oldest reference I could find was not 1908. I've got one from 1932, some in the one in 46, some in the 50s, and then a bunch in the 60s. So as people kind of started populating the area, the sightings went up.
Interesting. Okay, let's go to truck driving. Michael in Georgia. Hi, Michael.
How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say that I'm an avid hunter, and I'm here in Georgia. There's not a whole lot of wilderness here in Georgia, and I know a lot of times we'll get in the area and see a big deer, I mean a large deer, and you know, a lot of hunters around, and it never gets seen again. So anything with any kind of a brain, you know, a deer's not a very smart animal. So anything with any type of brain that can hear and smell like a deer can easily avoid people in the woods, you know. And also, my same grandparents lived in Sandown, Alabama. There was a black panther that I seen that crossed the road down from the creek, and my granddad had been telling us that he was hearing something down in the woods near the creek that would sound like a woman screaming at night. And I've heard other people say that they've seen this large black cat in Georgia and Alabama. And they say there's not anything such as that. You know, the Gale Chief says, you know, and I know I did see one.
Yeah, that's so similar to Arkansas, and that was one of the theories they proposed for the Fowl Monster, that it was a black panther, which, you know, black panthers don't walk upright on two legs, so it kind of eliminated it. But nonetheless, people, including the sheriff, saw a black panther. So,
and there have been cases of black panthers being found, and you know, how they escaped from petting zoos, who knows what. But
sure, yeah, definitely.
But this creature stands upright, it's big, and it's scary.
Definitely.
There's no doubt. Tell me about Monstro Bizarro.
Well, that's a title I came up with for when I started doing the cryptozoology column in RooMorgue. RooMorgue is a popular horror magazine, and they cover horror culture, movies, games, all that. They wanted to include a cryptozoology element, and so since I'm, you know, I'm a fan of horror movies and everything else, but I'm also a researcher into the cryptozoology. It was perfect for me to kind of bring that element to their magazine. So it's been really fun to write about, you know, different aspects of cryptozoology to a lot of times to a crowd that may or may not ever have heard of these type things or be, you know, that familiar. So it's been pretty fun.
Lyle, why the fascination with horror movies, with the unknown?
Well, you know, for me personally, it's just, I mean, it was kind of there from the beginning. I can remember, you know, as far back as I can remember, kind of being attracted to the vampire movies and all that. And, you know, like I said, seeing The Legend of Boggy Creek when I was young. So it's just kind of something you're born with. And I just always enjoyed the mystery. You know, and to me, once I kind of discovered Bigfoot and I saw the Patterson film and all that, that was always spookier to me than horror movies because...
Sure. It was real. It seemed to be.
I'm thinking, if this thing is real and it's walking around in the woods where I'm potentially going hunting with my dad, that is scary.
Have you ever seen what you think might be Bigfoot?
No, unfortunately, I've never had a sighting myself, so still...
What would you do if you came face-to-face with one?
Well, you know, you kind of sit around and think what you would do, and I'm sure the moment would be quick and fleeting, you know. You think you could get that great picture, you know, and you think you're not going to be frightened, but I've interviewed so many people that say, you know, they saw it and, you know, it evoked fear. So you just really never know how you're going to react. I would think, you know, if I saw the Falk monster, I might run up and hug him, you know.
I'm not sure you'd do that. Lyle, thank you so much. Good luck with your book. Just came out, Beast of Boggy Creek. Fascinating read and definitely one of those fascinating stories. I'm not sure what I would do if I came face-to-face with one of those creatures. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.